This week on the Dragzine Podcast, Hi joins us from the Midwest Drags to talk about drag and drive events, what's going on at their event this year, and a whole lot more. So pull those belts tight. Get ready to put in the beams. The Dragzine Podcast starts now. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of the Dragzine Podcast. I'm your host, Senior Associate Editor Brian Wagner. This week, we're taking it to the streets with Hyde from the Midwest Street Drags to kind of talk about the series, what's going on, this whole drag and drive thing and everything else. So if you're into going fast with a streetcar, this is the podcast to listen to. And without further ado, let's get this drag racing party started. All right, my guest this week on the Dragzine Podcast is Hyde from the Midwest Drags. What's going on, Hyde?
Not a whole lot. How are you doing from Indianapolis?
Doing good here in central Ohio, dealing with our crazy winter conditions, or, you know, fake winter, or, you know, what's going to happen next. You know, I split a bunch of wood for my shop this year, and I haven't really had to use much of it yet because it hasn't been stupid cold.
That's kind of been a very good thing, actually.
Yeah, the only downside, what people don't realize in the Midwest is, you know, I actually like the cold snaps because it kills all the bugs for a little while. So, you know, unfortunately, we haven't got that quite yet.
Well, that's one thing that's very much true, is that you pay for it one way or another. Because if you have a very light winter like what we've been having, where it's high 50s, low 60s, you don't get that frost. So then you pay for it in the middle of the summer with the higher bugs and the higher temperatures and things like that. So it's always a trade-off.
Yeah. But the nice thing is, though, it makes it a little bit bearable when we're trying to get cars ready for the race season, where you're not freezing to death working out in your shop all the time.
That's true.
But, yeah, it's you know, getting ready to get about that season, and, you know, kind of with what you do in the Midwest Drags deal, I'm kind of curious, how did it come about for you to kick off your own Drag and Drive series? Because Drag and Drive series, to our listeners, a lot of the stuff sort of like Drag Week, where you bring the car in, you race it, you drive it to the next event, and it's a week-long torture test. You know, how did you come about with this deal?
It came over a culmination of a couple different years, because I've always been a huge Drag Week fan. I've always wanted to be able to compete in it myself. But it takes such a commitment to be able to do it, even just to be able to get there, just because of the fact of just your time commitment. I mean, we're talking about vacation time because it's a whole week. We're talking about vacation money. And so not only do you have to be able to work on those things, have a very reliable car, now you got to sell this experience to your spouse that you're going to take off for a week with your buddies and go do this. And sometimes spouses come on out, and that's fantastic. Sometimes spouses don't. So that was one aspect of it. And then that led me to, well, how about if I just have a poker run to be able to support my city, and we'll just have some of these cars come on out and have fun like that. Gaming Commission found out my intentions and said that they would recommend that I don't do that, because that sounds like gambling, even though it was just a straight up honest poker run, which then led me down the route of, well, since I can't do Drag Week because I can't afford the 9 days that it takes to go do it, how about I have a smaller one where it's only 3 days and make it like what Drag Weekend, what used to be over there in the Phoenix, Arizona area. And then it just, you know, Summit got a hold of what I was doing and they wanted on, and then Mosier and Gear Vendors and Iski Cams and all these bigs wanted to be a part of it and wanted me to grow it and work with Motor Trend to turn it into annual events that a lot of cars can compete in. And that's one of the reasons why we have adopted the classes and the rules to be exactly the same of what Freiberger has mastered in the last 15 years of sorting this all out. We've adopted that. And as a result, we've got a lot of cars that are coming on out running in the Midwest Drags with full intentions of turning right around and then competing in Drag Week in September.
See, now that's what I find interesting, is that you guys, good and interesting way that you've been able to partner with the folks over at Drag Week, because for a long time, a lot of these cars were almost looked at as like specialty kind of deal cars where there really wasn't a lot for them to do. And now more of these, you know, even smaller events, like we've seen it here in Ohio, where people have just kind of done their own, like, little, you know, some friends got together and done a Drag Weekend thing. And you're kind of seeing that kind of spread now, and you guys are sharing the same rules. How did that come about, that you guys decided to share the rules with Drag Week?
Well, last year I went something completely different. I took a lot of advice from some of the big racers, including Dennis Taylor, who was very instrumental in helping me get pointed in the right direction because of his years of experience. But we had our own rules, we had our own classes, and I even incorporated eighth mile tracks, because of the whole idea that when you roll into town, you're racing local rules or you're not racing at all. And so I kind of thought, well, wouldn't that really be a great way to truly test the universality of your car and make sure that truly is, if you can roll on in and do an eighth mile and the very next day you do a quarter and then go back to an eighth again. But that changed a lot of things in the driver's minds that they were not ready to do just as of yet. And I think that that hurt part of the car count. So the best thing to do is to work with Drag Week and share the classes, because we already know that there are thousands of cars on out there that already fit those classes. They already work in those classes. It's a no-brainer. So then when they come on over to my event, whatever classes you ran in Drag Week, it'd be the same thing right on over here. And it just makes it a lot easier for everybody.
Well, I think that's a smart play too, because now, you know, you get people that might not be able to make one or the other events, or something sold out, something comes up, and it gives them an opportunity now to really kind of do both. And I think it's going to up the participation of, you know, the events significantly now.
This is what we're going to do in 2020 is going to be such a historic race. Not only just some of the things we've got going on within our own race in itself, but it's going to change some of the conversations that Freiberger and Finnegan are going to be able to have, because they can rely on what we had just seen earlier in June at the Midwest Drags. And then you got these same cars, these same 30, 40, 50 cars rolling on into Drag Week, and they can kind of compare. Instead of saying, hey, what did they do last year at Drag Week? They're going to be able to say, what did they do just 3 months ago?
Yeah, and, you know, kind of looking at the performance aspect of this, that's kind of one of the cool things. You know, we were talking about in the pre-call about this, that I'm of the mindset that anything can be a street car if you're brave enough. And that seems to, when you start throwing the, you know, the phrase street car out there, people seem to, they get up on the chip real quick and start, you know, it's a very divisive topic.
It is. You find out who your friends are for sure when you start using the word streetcar. That's absolutely right. I prefer to have a little bit more of a definition in between the two, and I like to say streetable, because clearly what some of these unlimited cars are capable of doing and the way that they're constructed, they're not really a daily. And you know, when you start taking something like Schroeder's impressive Corvette, for me to drive that on the street as a daily, I'd be more concerned that it gets stolen when I'm inside of the bank than I would anything else, as far as, you know, its reliability goes. But nonetheless, they are willing to be in it for a week. They drive 1,000 miles. They beat the hell out of them. They are streetable cars.
I'd buy that. I'd buy that for a dollar. That's definitely, you know, I guess that's kind of where the gray area pops up. And then you get someone like Tom Bailey, who, if you follow him on social media, he'll jump in one of his Drag Week cars and, like, he'll literally, you know, in his small town, be like, yep, you know, took the copper car out to, you know, go to dinner. I mean, he literally drives those cars as much as he can.
That's one of the reasons why he's a winner, because that is what it comes down to. You cannot just be in these cars a little bit and then go and compete on Drag Week and expect to be able to win. You have to really know these cars in and out. And, you know, most of these cars still today, you know, the trend used to be that it was always the valve trains that are breaking. But this trend today is still, they always fail out there on the street. You got to put as many miles on these cars as you possibly can. Really know them, really work everything on in to be able to truly go on out there with some confidence and have an idea that you're at least going to be able to finish the events.
Well, it's crazy. A couple of years ago, Bailey won Drag Week, and then him and Morris jumped in the rig and drove it up to the shakedown up at Norwalk. No sleep. They literally got done the awards banquet, had the car loaded up, and headed up to Norwalk. And they were basically going to go from running that car for a week solid to entering a pro mod race with it and could probably almost make the field. That's nuts.
It's impressive. It absolutely is impressive. It's very much like Brian Coleman says, you know, this is an Ironman competition, because it's not just how fast your car is. It's not just the week, and it's not just the miles. There's another component in here which most people never think about and they never talk about: driver fatigue.
Oh, these yeah.
That was one of the biggest things that I saw take people on out of Drag Week this last year, is because by the time you get to day three and you're so sleep deprived, you're dehydrated, you haven't rested, you're not thinking clearly. And a lot of times you become your worst enemy just because of the simple fact that you're not clearly diagnosing even a very, very simple and minute problem, but you just can't see the problem clearly enough because you're just so wiped out. And that's what makes this event so unique and so interesting, is because a lot of these cars are, you know, they're coming like from California, or the Canadians come on down. They've got a good day and a half drive before the event even starts. And if they're not well rested before the 5-day marathon goes on, starts to be able to happen, that's just setting them a little bit back behind the eight ball.
Oh yeah, totally. Anybody that's been at a big racer event knows that it's a marathon. And by the time you hit eliminations on Sunday, you know, even then at a normal race, you're feeling it a little bit, but something with a drag and drive event, you know, by the final day, you know, you're pretty much cooked.
I've always said, even though I've never competed in drag week, but I've just watched these people and I'm studying how they're doing it, I've always said drag week is the hardest working vacation you'll ever have.
Oh yeah. You got it. The dudes that had that white Supra, I talked with them up at the import versus domestic event, and they at the World Cup, they said they loved it. You know, they still have, I think they're some of the drag week lettering on the car. And they talked about just how much it challenges and pushes you. And from a company standpoint, they learned a lot about their car and their combination running drag week. And I think that's another cool thing, that how you can kind of refine and learn about a vehicle doing one of these deals.
It's the whole basis for the value of our daily drivers today. Most people do not realize that many of the features that are in your minivan or your sedan that you drive to and from work, all of that knowledge came from motorsports, from the highest level professional motorsports, and it's all trickled down. Anywhere from the handling to the suspension to the tires to the safety components to the comforts, it all came from the early days back when Vanderbilt was racing Ford on dirt roads.
Oh, yeah. It's like the space program, that so many things that we have in daily life now came from the space program, where it's, you know, the highest level, and you got to work the problem. You got to figure something out. And that's how we ended up with, you know, Velcro and all these other things that they came from the space program.
And Tang, don't forget Tang, right? That's everybody's America's favorite drink.
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember drinking Tang when I was a kid. You know, that was a treat after during football practice at the end of, you know, or at a game, you got some Tang instead of regular water. But yeah, it all comes from the space program.
Yeah, that was pre-Gatorade days.
And, you know, it's funny you talk about space age technology and just some of the innovation you see in some of these combinations. And then last year, the Midwest Drags, if I remember correctly, didn't you guys have like some kind of crazy like nitro-powered hot rod deal that came out to play?
We did, and he's coming on out again. That's Brian Coleman, his 33 Chrysler. He had some problems last year. He's since sorted them on out, and what he found on out was that his magnetos were not hot enough to give him the dieseling effect that a nitro motor actually needs. Because for those who don't understand how to burn top fuel, the spark plugs only live in a top fuel motor for just a little while, just a little while. They burn themselves on out inside the first 100 feet. They're no longer there anymore. It literally is the dieseling action that's making the motor run. Well, his magnetos were not hot enough. He sent his senses put on some Pro 44s that you would see on any top fuel car, and now he's consistently been running in the sixes. So watch for him to come on out and run in the unlimited class up against Bailey and Schroeder this year.
That's, to me, that right there is what makes these drag and drive events so awesome. And you see it on, you know, in the coverage of the events after the fact, is just the crazy combinations that you're going to have. Basically a nitro powered vehicle being street driven during a week long race. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, and what he does to make it go back and forth between street trim and race trim, you know, of course he's got to switch on out the headers. He's got zoomies on there, but he switches them on out because one pair is muffled versus the other pair being not. But that's another perfect example that if you are brave enough, anything can be a street car, because he does. He's an RCIS tech, which, you know, he works with heart valves. And so he drives that car to the hospital and will go on in, work his shift, hop in the car, come on out, takes his wife on out to dinner with it. Can you imagine that, though, pulling on up to the light, look on over, see this crazy green thing with a moon tank on the front of it?
I would, you know, I did a story on a dude that did a, basically a, it's almost like a fuel-altered street car I forget, it's like a Ford Tilapia or something like that. And it had a big old roots blower out with zoomies, and he drove it on the street like that with the slicks. And to me, I'm not the kind of person that I don't think I should own a vehicle like that, because I would have way too much fun scaring the living daylights out of people at traffic lights with it.
Yes. And kids love it. Kids love it.
Oh yeah. What's cooler than the sound of a freaking, a blower car getting wrapped at a stoplight through some gnarly exhaust.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention the fact that you see that pull up the hospital. I'd be like, I want the dude that drives that car working on me, because he gets it.
That is for sure. You know, in preparation for William Coleman comes on out, he has said some amazing things too. He's been on Drag Week 6 or 7 times, but he has to take his own nitromethane, because of course that's not something that our Sunoco fuel trucks bring on out, even though they bring out every single other octane, including E85. He has to bring his own nitromethane with him during these events, which then means that he's got to have his own hydrometer so he can mix his blend. Well, he told me, a hydrometer is not something you can just pick up at any auto parts store. So if you cannot pick something up at just a regular auto parts store, you better make sure you've got a couple of them on your vehicle, even multiples. And so he's got one hydrometer that he primarily uses, but then if that one breaks, because they're just glass, right? They're just glass beakers. If that one breaks, then he's got a spare. And if that spare breaks, then his spare's got a spare. So he always carries 3 hydrometers to go race for 5 days.
No, it makes sense. That's, kind of in the same vein. It's almost like that car that Crompton and Lindbergh were tooling around in. Nothing cooler than seeing a screw blown alcohol engine in a freaking Nomad wagon. That, to me, that's another one of those cool cars you see in one of these drag and drive events. That's it's innovation to the max.
100%. And that's what makes living in our time and doing what we're doing so amazing. Because I've always said that Drag Week and Midwest Drags is now getting us back to the foundation of drag racing, when you had to drive your cars everywhere. And it was 100% about innovation and how fast you can go. And we just saw that most recently with Bailey laying down that 599. I mean, just when you thought, are we stuck in the 620s? No. Steve finds it a little bit more. And now we're living life in the fives in a streetable car.
To me, that whole deal was just so insane, like literally a walk-off home run kind of thing with that car. That was awesome to see.
Yes, I'm glad to know that Tom is not going to retire, but that basically made me remember how Peyton Manning went out too, how he won the Super Bowl, and then he turned right around and he retired. That's because, when you saw them at Cecil and they had both the heads off, you start getting a little bit concerned. You knew there was plenty of time left of the event, but you start getting concerned when they're going that deep into it. And then they turn right around, the last hit of the last day, perfect weather conditions, perfect track, and he just goes on out there and lets it all hang out.
And, it's crazy that car runs that in street trim. And, you start asking, well, what's next? And, I'm kind of the mindset of, well, I don't know, but it's probably gonna be pretty damn cool whatever they do next.
Yeah, I don't know Steve Morris very well, but you got to give hats off to the guy who is leading the innovation in this. And he's also now, getting the attention of a lot of other big name engine builders too. Frank Beck has come on up and teamed with the Midwest Drags, because Frank has made his reputation 35 years as an engine builder, mostly with offshore power boats. And like Frank says, when you're running that offshore power boat, that motor is running uphill for an hour. And that's basically endurance racing. Let's just put some tires on it and go do the exact same thing. So Frank is coming on out, and he's going to try to get some of the attention that Steve has worked so hard to be able to gain, to be able to say that, it's there. No matter what it is that you want to be able to do, you got this wealth of knowledge of these engine builders that's going to get you in the winner's circle.
Yeah, again, like you said, it's trickle-down technology. It's the same thing when you listen to, Schroeder and them talk with Nolan Jamore at ISKI about kind of what they've developed there and how that has kind of been wrapped up into other stuff that ISKI has came out with, and it helps everybody. It helps every racer. It helps, with a project I'm going to be doing, I need something with better valve train stability and better performance. It comes from these kinds of events.
It's nice to know that grassroots racers are helping lead R&D for big corporations, because that's basically what's happening.
No, racers are the best form of R&D if you can control the process properly, because they're going to find ways to do stuff the parts that engineers can't even dream up.
Yeah, that's right. They're gonna use the part that you can't use on the dyno.
Yeah, it's 100%. It falls in the same vein of the idea that I tell people that tools have two purposes, the one that they're designed for and the one that I'm about to use them for. You know, anything could be a hammer if you need it to be. And it's the same thing with, you know, these different race car parts is, you know, it was something when I had Tom on the podcast, he talked about you go to some of these companies and you explain to them what you want to do or what you've done. And they look at you and you're like, you did what with our part?
Teach the engineer something, huh?
Yeah. And then, you know, the engineers start scratching their heads and their minds start running wild. And like you said, next thing you know, we've got a new really awesome product out there that, you know, can help everybody. You know, doing this whole the drag and drive deal, what's, you know, kind of flipping through your mind, what's a vehicle that you saw that just stopped you in your tracks? You're like, all right, but besides the nitro hot rod, something that just made you stop and go, all right, wow, that's kind of cool.
You know, there's a lot of them. I mean, man, you can spend a week just coming on up with some of the categories of some of these. I'd have to think back on that, but I'll tell you more than likely where I'm going to go with it is it's going to be a stick shift racer.
Yeah.
My heart has always been in my car is a 55 Chevrolet. It's a 468 with an M23 in there, which is just a modern version of the M22. 370s on a 295 radial. It's by no means, going to rotate the earth, but when I line on up against another H pattern, I have the opportunity to miss a shift. And I think having to really drive your car, truly drive your car, missing the shift and missing that pattern, to me, that adds a lot of value into when you're looking at a car.
Right on. Yeah, you see some of these different stick shift combo cars, and just in general, and you see some pretty interesting vehicles. And doing it with a clutch just makes it, you know, again, not just the driving, but the maintenance side of it is a little bit different, because that's another mechanical part that can get kind of unhappy and fail in a way that you can't imagine.
The tuning of these clutches is absolutely amazing. It's you know most people don't know this either, but when you run top fuel, the success and failure isn't necessarily always the crew chief. The crew chief gets a lot of the accolades for it, but the number two guy below the driver is the clutch guy,
Oh, yeah.
because it does not matter how much horsepower. There's no such thing as too much horsepower. It's all in clutch management, and that's what makes these stick shift cars either work or not.
Oh, yeah. That with the nitro stuff, you know, this year I started really paying attention to a lot more of the tech side and some of the nitro stuff. And just hearing some of these crew chiefs and, you know, Alan Reinhart, you know, talk about, you know, what goes into these clutches and how you got to keep them happy and how really important they are. And you see what they do on the track, it's kind of wild to watch one of those cars go through the process and seeing what that clutch went when it goes wrong and when it goes right, you know, kind of seeing the mechanical side of it. It's kind of wild.
It is wild. And what's really wild too is on those fuel cars, that clutch is, if that motor is running, that clutch is engaged the whole
Oh, yeah.
time. The whole time.
It's I did a story on the dude that reset the H pattern record here in the United States, that Super Jervis, and that I saw that car run up at import versus domestic, along with, you know, Jonathan Adkins, who had the record for a while with that 730, which, you know, nobody saw that coming. And that Supra, that car, that dude's got his hands full. He's a busy individual trying to keep that thing right side up straight and going fast and grabbing
Yes,
gears.
that's exactly right. That's exactly right. We have all the same classes and rules as Drag Week, but I did keep my two manual classes from the first year. So we've got manual H pattern, and we also have manual unlimited. The similarities are that they're both leg leave, and neither one is an air shifter. But the first class, which is the H pattern, we will allow either dogs or face plates, whichever one you want to call them. Whereas with the unlimited, it is unlimited unless it's an air shifter. But and the car count in both of those classes is actually pretty high. Some guys like Frank Romano, who would normally run in a different class, big block power adder class, He's coming on over, and he's actually running in one of the manual classes. There's,
Nice.
we're, I think that we're really going to start seeing not only some of the adoption that what I'm doing from what Drag Week is doing based off of their successes. I think you're going to start seeing it go the other direction. I think that, you know, as a promoter, your number one recipe is give the racers the race that they want, right? If the demand is there, you're foolish not to be able to make it. And so I think that we're going to see that the demand is back. And I think that Drag Week might entertain bringing back some manual classes as a result of the show that we're going to put on.
Well, I think that also falls into, if you look at the current trends in the racing, just in the car world, you can cut it any way you want. We're in the golden age of factory built, modern golden age of factory built horsepower, where you can go to the dealership and buy, some crazy Corvette, Camaro, or Mustang. Some of them still have a stick in them, and it could be one of those things where they see, Drag Week or something like that, and then they look at it like, oh, well, hey, there's a stick shift class. I want to get in on that. And then all of a sudden you have, legit 9-second street cars, guys just, coming out, cruising down the road with their AC, and they're having fun and enjoying the event.
That's crazy, rolling around with air conditioning, because there's a lot of these cars that actually still have air in them. Clark Rosenstangl just recently took his air out because he's going with a Steve Morrison X motor on in there. He's really changing the game. He's trying to find another second. And that car wasn't fast enough anyways, it being 7:30, so now he's trying to find another second. So unfortunately he's having to lose the air. But can you imagine rolling around in a 7:30 car on the street with your AC?
It's one way to keep your wife happy for sure.
It's one way to keep Amy happy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That is right. Yep.
And, yeah, and the only reason why I'm looking to remove AC out of my street car is just so I have more room for activities to do maintenance. But like you said, it's crazy to think about the level of horsepower in these cars and what you could see at these events, being able to, just drive around and you get to go out and you drive it, you get to use it. I think that's another really interesting thing. What are your thoughts on this, that, these drag and drive events are promoting the idea of to go out and drive it?
It is, if you look across all the drag racers and you look across what we're doing with and sharing the Drag Week racers, there's one common denominator that my guys are going to say, and that has to be, and it always is going to be, we just like driving our cars. And that's not something that you hear other forms of drag racing guys say. They don't start by saying, we just love driving our cars all the time, because they don't wear, they only drive them for 1,320 feet, and that's basically it. That is the foundation of these events, is that the guys want to go fast in their cars, but ultimately they still want to be able to drive them as well. And you see the popularity of Power Tour now going on 25 years, and 5 to 6, 7, 8,000 cars coming on out and cruising around the country because they just want to drive their cars.
Yeah, and that's the enjoyment part of it. And you hear some guys that, they heads up drag race, and a lot of them will reminisce about when they, if they've had the car for a while, how much they liked it when they could still drive it on the street. They'll throw the caveat out there. It's not like, I don't love this now. I don't love going fast, because it's just nice to be able to go out and have something to drive on the street.
100%. I'll tell you, this is going to be such a historic race. We have got some really interesting characters who are going to come on out and compete with us. One of them happens to be Malcolm Story is going to bring on out Little Duke. And Little Duke is a nice small block Buick that's got full factory interior in it still. And it's the same thing that Malcolm says. He just likes driving the car, and he feels that his car would do better racing in a drag and drive style of event versus grudge or brackets. He doesn't want to have to cut the car up. He doesn't want to have to go Lexan, do all that other kind of stuff. So to be able to keep the car and still be able to go fast, he's going to come on out and try his hand at what we're doing.
And you mentioned that it kind of sparked something else in my mind, and I get your take on this. Another series that's been exploding in popularity is, the guys Justin and the Justin Price over at Streetcar Takeover. And I've been to one of those events, and it's definitely a younger crowd, and you see a lot of really badass cars. Do you think some of those guys, is there, are you guys looking to maybe, to work with Streetcar Takeover, or, kind of target more of those guys to get some crossover there to give them even more opportunities to race?
We absolutely could, because what they're doing is similar. It's not the same. It's not as similar as what we're doing with Drag Week. But yeah, Streetcar Takeover is definitely a big event. They've got what, six, seven events a year throughout the nation. I mean, they're definitely doing it, and they've got some very, very nice cars. Love to have some of those guys come on out.
Yeah, and that,
Absolutely.
and it kind of just it just popped in there just because I was talking with a coworker about Streetcar Takeover stuff the other day, and going to the event and just the again, it's the variety of cool vehicles that you saw at that event. Everything from, bolt-on F bodies, fourth gen F bodies running in their, 11-second class, all the way down to, legit single digit. Street cars have to do, the 30 model cruise, true street kind of deal, all kind of there. And if you look at it, those are again people that would be great candidates if they had time, to do something like a drag and drive event.
That's usually the biggest limiter. I bet you if you were to poll a lot of the guys from Streetcar Takeover, probably the number one thing that would prevent them from their barrier of entry would be the time.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, it's a 5-day event, but you've got a day and a half or 2 days on each end of that as well, and that gets you up to 8 or 9 days.
Yeah, and like you were saying earlier, the whole time off deal kind of that starts getting racked up pretty quick, which and the it sucks, but like you said, it kind of is what it is. There's nothing you can really do there to adjust it.
It's the events. I mean, if you get rid of that, you're back to racing on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, and it takes out the level of endurance that's required with a drag and drive event. Now, if you were going to go through, we can have some fun here. If you were given a blank slate, you just won the lottery, you've got a big pile of cash. What would you build as the, the perfect drag and drive vehicle that you're going to go have fun with? And, maybe not necessarily in limited class, but a quicker car in a quicker class.
I would stick with where my heart has always been, and that being big block. And I even would start, and I think that I would stick with NA as well. Just it may or may not be a mountain motor, but it would be a big block and single carburetor, and see how fast I can go with a manual, and do that. But I also think one of the things that I would focus on most heavily would be the trailer. That's another topic, as well as driver fatigue, that I think a lot of people don't pay as much attention to, like their maintenance schedule. When you look at the people who are winners, especially multiple winners, one of their keys to success that they do is when their car is back at the shop, they don't work on their car out of their toolboxes there in the shop. They work out of off their trailer. So if anything that is on that car, that there is a tool or a screwdriver that is required, that is specialty to be able to use it, they don't go to their toolbox to get it. They go get it off of their trailer. And you have to be able to service that vehicle along the side of the road at 3 o'clock in the morning in the gravel, just as you would service it in the shop. So I would, just because you said I had unlimited money, I would stick with a big block, NA, manual, and I would focus a lot of my efforts on the trailer.
Okay, let's take that off on a little tangent here. Is with the trailer design, that's something I've seen. I've had a few friends that have participated in Drag Week and seen them kind of build their own trailers. What are some of the things and some of the innovations you've seen and stuff that people just need to have built into these trailers if they're going to be serious about surviving a drag and drive event?
Yeah, and I would say serious is wanting to compete in two or more events a year, because at that point I mean, you're kind of going down that direction of this is the form of drag racing that I want to do. Well, there's several different types, and actually we're writing an article for RPM Magazine about trailers right now, because you've got the guys that are new to this. They want to come on out and learn. They need a quick trailer, so they go on out and they get a U-Haul. There's those enclosed like that where there's only a single rear entry. Then there's your enclosed that have got the door flip-ups on the side that are certainly a lot more customizable, that might have a platform from, let's say, Harbor Freight. And then you've got your more of a modular, completely open trailer. And all of them have their pros and cons. But I will tell you, there's a couple of things about each of them that are very, very interesting. When you go down that road of the U-Haul trailer and it's a single load from the rear, there's a couple things. It's very difficult. First of all, anything you need is always going to be in the front of the trailer. So everything's got to come out. The second thing being, too, you have to have it hooked up to something because as soon as you try walking on in there, the tongue is going to come on up and your stuff's going to start falling all over the place, which then takes you to the people that build their own trailers that have the doors. So they're trying to be able to make it a lot easier to just be able to go on into compartments or grab that toolbox or grab, they know their drills are over here or flip on the valve on their small little portable pancake compressor. That is great. And then you've got that more modular open one where it's just like a chromoly tube chassis with these black weatherproof cases. When you start going that modular route, what we're seeing with these guys is that they're actually building these trailers with universal spare parts that could be working on the car if something were to fail. Like, for example, shocks, lug nuts, fasteners, light bulbs, all the little tiny things that operate that trailer are also then used, they could be used as a spare in an emergency situation to support that car.
That's ingenious. Totally ingenious.
Yeah, I mean, that's just taking it to another level. I mean, the wheels on some of these trailers, not only do you have your rain tires on the trailer, but the trailer wheels themselves are the same as the front wheels on the race car.
Which to me is so smart because when I was talking to Boosted GT Chris Hamilton last week about when he, smacked the wall with the car and he didn't know if he could make it back out. It didn't look that bad, but one of the things that was damaged was a front wheel and tire, and he didn't have a spare. And it's one of those things that you don't think about till you're at the track and something happens. You're like, oh, I need another wheel, and there's no place to get a wheel.
If you can't buy it at an AutoZone or an O'Reilly, it better be on your trailer.
That's I was talking with another media person that's going to be a Turbo Tara Hanlon. It's going to be doing some. I think she's doing Drag Week with her husband, and that was one of the things that they were kind of mentioning. Is she said that exactly? Is we're putting stuff on the car that it's all parts you can buy at an AutoZone. It's the only way to fly.
That is correct. That is correct. I mean, we saw 4 or 5 years ago, day two took Lutz out. He was running a very specialized fuel pump along the side of the road. No chance of getting it inside of 24 hours. You're automatically out. So, I mean, of course, that's what he needed to be able to do to compete at the caliber to which he's running. But that just gets back to, like our early days of drag racing before we had the big semis that supported the race cars. When you drove your car there, you were figuring it out, or you were just sitting along the side of the road. And we're back to those days again, and it's so exciting.
Well, kind of going off of that, one of the craziest things I've ever seen on Drag Week is some of my friends from Indiana. They went on Drag Week with their, their stock bottom end LS powered stuff, and one of them smoked an engine, and they literally, like they made the pat their pass in the morning, engine died, and it was right towards the end, and they actually R&R'd an engine at the track, and they Facebook live the entire process, and it was totally gnarly to watch them. Just literally, they sent one of their friends. They went in one of the drag, in their drag week cars, went to the local junkyard and said, "I'll take that, LS53 right there." Brought it back, bolted it back together, finished drag week with an engine they literally just bought sight unseen. Hoped it worked.
That is the whole spirit of what we're trying to do right there. That's exactly what we're talking about. It's not just whether or not you can service your own car too, but it's your other buddies who are racers that are sticking around to be able to help you get back on the road because it's the hardest working week's vacation you'll ever have, but it's also, in my opinion, the most fun you're ever going to have because you're hanging on out with your buddies, your crew, doing your things.
I was here at Columbus when Larson went sixes in his Nova for the first time, and kind of seeing the tail end of drag week is kind of wild because when you're sitting there watching these cars roll in, it's almost like you're seeing like almost like some of them the walking wounded coming in. They're smoking, they're chugging, they're knocking, they're banging, but you can see them get there and you see the look on the driver's face of like, all right, I made it. At least it's only got to make it down the track one more time, and That's it. And that's another interesting thing that a lot of people don't seem to understand is that feeling of relief after you've completed it.
The sense of accomplishment, because there's only a couple places where it's, if you will, maybe a little bit of a baseball analogy, but it's like when you actually made it to the next plate, right? That's that look on their face when you see them rolling into the track. It's like they made it to the next plate. They're safe. They're going to live for one more play. They're good to go. And then at the end of the event, it doesn't really matter how they place, because, sure, you'd like to be able to win your class, but the fact that you made it through it with your buddies and you accomplished things, a lot of these guys accomplished things that they didn't think that they would know or even have the internal mental capacity or strength to be able to do, but they still did it.
It's like competing. It's literally like competing in a triathlon if you've never done it before.
It's very much an Ironman competition. Because it's not just how good you are in the shop, because your shop's not with you. When you haven't slept for several days and it's 3 o'clock in the morning and it's raining, that's when you have to decide, and you're broken down along the side of the road because your trans is out. That's when you got to decide: are you going to keep going or are you not?
And you mentioned one of the things that kind of surprised you about. In the pre-call about this whole deal was, the spirit of the competitors. You want to kind of elaborate and tell the story about that to our listeners?
Just in the fact that it's not as competitive and cutthroat for those who have never been able to come on out and actually see an event or even compete in the event. If you just are, your knowledge is based off of what you see on the live feeds. These guys, when they come on up there to the line, yes, they're coming up to the line as individuals, but behind the scenes, when they're going down the road or when they're in the hotel parking lot at night doing maintenance, you'll see five or six guys team up on the problem to be able to get it knocked out so that one guy can stay in competition. It's not cutthroat. It's not do or die, other than the whole fact that there's very much a team mentality and a non-team type of enrollment, because there are no teams, even though a lot of these guys do travel together. And they say, because there is safety in numbers, if you break down or they break down, you can help each other get off the side of the road. But it's that mentality of it being like another family on the road that you might only see some of these people once a year, because you saw them last one, the one before that, and the one before that, and then you see them on social media. But other than that, you never see them. But yet, when you're together and you're working on a problem, it's like you've known each other forever.
Yeah, and that it seems like no matter what, the people on drag week, even when things go wrong, they're having fun. That's that's the big thing I think that keeps drawing these guys back to getting punched in the mouth each year is they have fun even when it's not being like fun. Like you said, it's that spirit of being with people doing the same thing and just doing something that, not everybody can do.
I think it's very, very much that, because we are in the infancy of this. There's only a few thousand people who have done this over the course of the 15 years that Drag Week has been doing it. It couldn't be more than 5 or 6 or 7 thousand people that have tried to do this in the past 15 years. So they are still very much the new pioneers of old form of drag racing.
Yeah. And again, it kind of circles back to seeing the innovation and stuff that these people do. I did an article on a Swedish guy that took a Volvo, put an LS, LS swapped it, threw a turbo on it, and he bought, like, the whole story behind it, like, he bought it in California, drove it to Michigan, and then they built it in Michigan, finished it up like 2 days before drag week, had never really shook it down. And then they take it, and some of these cars, they've never been fired until they're, pulled into the parking lot on the first, on move-in day.
Yeah.
And to me, if you want to call it OCD, that's terrifying to me to think that you're going to take something for a weeks-long journey that you've never even, started. It's like, all right, well, let's see how this goes. I couldn't do that.
You got to have a lot of faith in your abilities and whoever else has been wrenching on it with you to believe that. But there's a lot of guys that do that. These events are spread on out on the calendar so well, yet for some unknown reason, some of these guys, they do kind of wait until the last minute, maybe because they don't know what they want to do, how they want to modify the car. They don't necessarily know how fast they want to be able to go, the direction that they're going to go with it, Or it could just be a financial reasons why they were waiting on parts. But some of these guys are inside of 30 days of the events and they still have half their car torn apart.
Yeah, I've seen, the pictures on social media of like bare chassis and guys going, "Well, I guess I better put this together." I'm like, "Dude, you got more than a weekend's worth of work there. You might want to get cracking on this."
Well, that's when he orders a couple Papa John's and he calls everybody in his phone.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, it's like, "Hey, everybody, if you're not doing anything, let's play race car." And by race car, I mean we got to take this literally pile of parts and make it a functioning vehicle that's, going to last a week getting beat on. Now, from a promoter standpoint, doing this for the first time, what was something that kind of surprised you on the execution side that, you didn't necessarily think you would run into the situation in your planning phases when it happened? You're like, "All right, well, that's something we couldn't account for."
Well, I've been a professional promoter for quite some time now since we came on out with the ProQ Motorsports event software, which hit the market in 2012, and then 2015 is when I kind of shifted from working on that to being a promoter. So some of the other events that we have done, but they've always been a little bit more car show oriented with a small drag race or autocross component and a swap meet component. But one of the biggest things about those kinds of events is that they're stationary for one weekend, So once you're there and once you're set on up, you don't really have to worry about everything. The show can kind of almost go on cruise control. This is putting on the show every single day because you've got to pack up, you've got to move, you've got to get yourself there, and your crew's got to unpack and be ready for the line of racers who are sitting at the gate before the sun even comes up, and you got to be ready for those guys. And that was kind of one thing that I never really truly appreciated before because you can't see it until you're a part of it. But the whole fact that you're taking this circus, if you will, on the road from stop to stop to stop for one whole week, and to the eyes of the racer, you got to make it look as seamless as possible because it is their vacation, it's their fun. You got to make sure they have it. It's up to you.
I never really thought of it from that sense that, you're basically, like you said, you're putting on five, literally just almost five individual events. And, I've helped put on car shows and track rentals and track days and other events. So I know what it's, exactly what you're talking about. It's stationary, you set up, you're kind of, you sort out some problems, you're fine. But, it doesn't sink in that you're going to have to do that five separate times until you go to the next event. And even the smallest little thing that you can't account for could cause a problem. And then you got to figure out, you got to work the problem like a drag week racer right then and there to solve it because there is no failure option.
The show must go on, and that's exactly. And what went seamless yesterday might break on you today, and you just have got to be able to fix it and be able to get it done because you have a responsibility to the racers to make it happen, to be there.
Yeah. And, I was for, we were putting on a car show for our local car club, and we were 10 days out from a car show. And the venue we were going to put it at came to us and said, "Sorry, you can't have it here." Mind you, we've been advertising this thing for months, had flyers out, and all of a sudden we lose the venue. That's like the pit in your stomach, the feeling you get, it's very hard for people to understand that unless you've done event planning or execution. When you've got to drop back five and punt and figure something like that out. And it just goes to show that you never know what curveball is going to be thrown at you. And when you're doing something like this where it's a mobile deal, it amplifies what could go wrong even more.
It does. It does. Last year and again back for moving forward, we've been able to partner with Sunoco. So that's one thing that we don't have to worry about is whether or not we're going to have race fuel and what octanes we're going to have. On our registration forms, we ask what octane requirements your car has. Not necessarily because you have to run the Sunoco race fuel. You can run any fuel that you want. But we want to make sure that at the track, that if you're running E85 or you want 112 or 116, whatever it is you have, that we will be able to have it for you. And then, another thing too is we got to take our own nitrous. So, you work with big companies like Airgas to be able to make sure you got enough cylinders.
And that right there is to a racer, that makes a huge difference knowing that you're not, it makes it easier knowing that you have a fallback plan in case things go sideways or there is an issue. It's nice to know that something like that isn't going to trip you up. And it almost, you know, for me, if I'm going to enter an event, I'm like, all right, these guys seem like they got their act together because they've thought of some contingencies.
Not even just that, but you know, here's another thing too. So you got all these guys from around the country that are coming around here to race. A lot of these guys might have two different fuel systems because some guys run on a pump and some guys, do the E83. But some of the other guys that don't, and, you know, all they care about is getting to the track that morning, making their hits. And then when they're getting ready to leave, there's a couple factors. One, they're hungry, right? Might even be a little bit thirsty. And then the first thing that they're looking for or they're asking around, they're Google searching, is where's the next gas station so I can fill up on some pump gas. Well, we've eliminated that factor because Sunoco comes on out with a tanker of 94, so you can top off your tank and be 100 miles down the road before you even have to worry about the next gas station. It's little things like that that we're trying to be able to do that is going to allow the racer to be able to maximize his time thinking about the actual race and the competitive of the race versus all these little tiny obstacles that can occupy some of his thought time but aren't necessarily as rewarding.
You know, I worked at Disney World when I was on an internship in college, and this makes me think immediately of something that's very Disney related, that you're giving the guest a lot of amenities that they didn't necessarily think of. And it's just those little things that make an experience that much better, that makes you want to come back and say, shut up, take my money, I want to come race with you because you do nice things like that. And that's something I think a lot of other promoters should almost take note of.
You have to understand that this is entertainment for the racers. It's not just a regular Saturday race where there's a $20 buyback. This is a different kind of an event where you're all together for 1 week and you've got to make it as entertaining as you possibly can. But also, you know, what we're asking these guys to be able to do, we want them to focus on that and not all some of the other little tiny things. And what I mean by that is that we've got some really nice distinctions between our two events. One is that, drag week is 5 days long. We're 4 days of racing. Drag week does 300 mile daily routes because they really, really want to severely test your car. We have significantly shorter routes. Drag week has got one hit. We require two hits. So shorter days, more hits, shorter drives, so it changes your strategy. So in wanting them to be at the track longer and make those two hits, we've got to make sure some of the other things that they shouldn't have to worry about are already taken care of for them. And that's one of the examples why Sunoco has stepped up and brought pump gas to the track.
Yeah, that's just hearing that just makes, you know, racers – only like when it comes down to when you strip it down to the core, they require what I call the three P's. They need a program that's run somewhat sane. They need track prep that they can, you know, it's reliable and they can count on, it's decent. And then they just want to make sure if there's a payout that they get paid what they want. And if you can provide those three basics, 99% of your racers are just, they don't care, they'll race.
Yep. We've got, and I find that that's very, very true because a lot of our first year guys have already signed on up and they're coming back. I mean, we got Rick bringing his 70 Duramax from Galt, California. He drove it on out last year.
Yeah,
he's
remember
driving
that.
It on out again. We've got a lot of those things taken care of to make sure the racer has the best time as possible.
And again, like I said, it comes down to the program portion of it. When you're at an event, you know, as a racer, you can kind of sense if there's a certain semblance of organization and what's going on, how things are run. And it makes your experience at that event so much better when they're, you know, we're creatures of habit. We like to know things are going to be relatively the same in certain aspects, and knowing that, you know, you're going to get a hit a certain time, registration's going to open at a certain time, tech's going to be at a certain time, and then it happens. That really reflects on how a racer is going to talk about and feel about an event.
Yeah. And that, well, that's one thing that we've definitely done with this is that this event is run by all paid professionals. We don't have any volunteers working any position. If you see an event staff wearing one of the Midwest Drags red t-shirts, you know that they're being compensated. because they have a level of specialty in that one position where we have put them. We have Sam Lance, who used to be the official starter for a lot of years at Summit Motorsports Park. He comes on out with us, travels with us, so that there is consistency in that track prep from day to day to day. And it's not just the sole responsibility of that one track operator. It's Sam Lance's responsibility to make sure those lines are there for you. We've got Tim, who stands in the staging lanes, works exclusively like with Sam Lance and basically is our Lonnie Grimm. But everybody from our operations director all the way on down to our starters and our pit crew, every single one of them has experience in doing exactly the job that they've been hired to be able to do. Even our two announcers, NHRA and IHRA announcer, and with a lot of experience on what these cars are capable of.
And like I said, it adds the experience and gives it that predictability that is from a racer, you know, that it's going to be done right, or, you know, at least attempted to be done right.
Well, we're going to be here for a long, long time because we've got some great corporate sponsors that love this grassroots racing that we're doing. NHRA is loving what we're doing. You see how they're paying attention now when they had Bailey and Schroeder, Hunter and all of them come make some hits at the U.S. Nationals last year. And then this most recently after Drag Week in September, 32 of the cars were invited to come on out to one of the races in Carolina and make some hits. So you can see that NHRA is paying attention to what we're trying to be able to do.
Yeah, and kind of, you know, going off of that as well, you mentioned the pre-call that you guys were doing some special stuff for those that have served in the military. You know, what's going on with that?
That's our PSA campaign that I've been wanting to do for a long, long time. And basically the way that it's going to work is that it's very, very similar to what Kid Rock did when he was doing his concert series. He would let any former active or retired military veteran into one of his concerts for free. So we're going to do the exact same thing. At any one of our national events, the PSA campaign is going to explain how it is that you could be able to prove and gain valid entry. But basically, it is, most people don't realize this, but it's federal law and has been for quite some time that if you are a military veteran and you were to ask to have your military status put on your driver's license, they will do that. And then there you can show that at the gate and be able to get in. Another form is that you can also submit what's called a form. It's called the DD-214, Department of Defense Form 214, which shows your discharge papers. That's another way to be able to gain valid entry, so that it's not just about somebody showing on up and saying, hey, I'm a military veteran, and frauding the system to be able to get on in for free, but actually really helping these military veterans be able to come to our annual event any day that we're racing and be able to get on in for free. And then we're going to couple that with some of our merch as well, where we're going to be giving $1 for every T-shirt that we sell. We're going to be giving money to each different charity every single year. So this year we're looking at, would it be something like Wounded Warriors, or is it going to be the Military Family Relief Fund, which would do something similar to take care of the families while the soldier is having an operation? But we will then be able to count up the sales and have that announcement for the awards to be able to say, this is what we actually raised, this is the military charity that it's going to go to, and the people actually know that it's going to get done.
Yes, yeah, that's awesome for sure. You guys are definitely taking the time for that, and that's greatly appreciated, I'm sure, by those that have served.
The only reason why we're able to come on out and race is because of our veterans.
Oh, totally, 110%.
And just like Kid Rock said, we're doing this because we can.
You know, it's my father-in-law is a Vietnam vet, and, you know, spent a lot of time commander to the American Legion in Portsmouth, Ohio at one point. My wife and I actually got married there. And the thing that always struck me is the big sign that they have inside the Legion that states, all gave some gave all. And that is something that people really need to remember and realize in this country.
Yep, that's absolutely true. And I think it's a message that has been forgotten. And, you know, it's not even been 20 years yet, and a lot of people have already forgotten.
For sure. Well, our time here at the Drag Zine podcast is coming to an end, and I like to give my guests their ability to do their best own John Force impersonation. So what I'll do is I can turn the floor over to you, and you can talk about, you know, let people know where they can find info at, and, you know, sponsors, and, you know, Catching on Fire, and whatever else you'd like to talk about. So Hyde, I will turn it over to you and let you tell the people where to learn more.
Well, I do appreciate that. There are a couple of other things I just want to be able to mention too. All four days of racing, as well as the Molly Motorsports Awards ceremony, will be streamed live. That's thanks to Rick Johnson at Gear Vendors. It's going to be able to make that happen for us. Sunoco is bringing on out their fuel trucks for not only pump gas, but also all the variable different racing octanes. We will have nitrous oxide. It is free entry to any military personnel from the Department of Defense to all of our race days. And we've got MidwestDrags.com is our website. We also have Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Right on. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, I think we're going to have someone back out again for Drag Zine this year. And then, you know, catch it online and check it out. It's definitely awesome for sure. I was going to try to make it out. You know, we'd been talking about me just kind of tagging along and doing my experience of it. But unfortunately, the engine in my street car has decided that it wanted to become terminally ill. So I don't think I'm going to have the car back together quite by then, unless I decide to bump and hit my head and do one of these thrashes. But it's definitely going to be cool to check out for sure.
Yeah, you can still bring your father-in-law on out for a day.
Oh, definitely. I might see if, like I said, we might just come out and check it out at one of the local events and just check it out and absorb it in and snap some pictures and have a good time.
Yeah, we're going to be actually in your backyard, starting off at Summit Motorsports Park, going to Edgewater, Lucas Oil Raceway, and then returning again to Summit Motorsports Park on Friday, June the 5th.
Yes, and for those are some great tracks to check out for sure, and I will definitely I'm going to try to make it to up to Summit at least once, maybe for the finale again, just to check it out, just to see the walking wounded come in and see how people can finish this out.
You're going to want to see that, and you're also going to want to see us give away the 67 Chevy too, because it is what the Hot Rods by Havlux guys have done with this thing. This being a brand new real deal steel body, this is not an original car that had a lot of rust repair. This is a brand new car that did not even exist in May. And for those who came on out to last year's event, we actually had that exact same body on a body cart at the awards ceremony. And I said, this is the car that we're going to build and give away next year. So, you know, all the sponsors who have chipped in from that, we've got a very, very long list of high-end sponsors from Real Deal Steel, Hot Rods by Havlux, who put it together. Frank Beck made us a 555 cubic inch motor with scat crank and rods, Molly pistons. Delta PAG made us a custom radiator with fans. We got a Chris Austin's front clip on there, Rosser transmission, Gear Vendors, Mosier rear end, 35 spline, RC Comp wheels, Billet Fabrication lug nuts, Mickey Thompson tires, Castle Collision Center did a fantastic job painting the car, Blastech hood and bumpers. Holly EFI everywhere with a digital dash, B&M shifter. I mean, this has got all of the correct names on this car. Very impressive car. Took it to SEMA, won a Good Guys Gold Participant Award for it, and we're going to give the thing away in June.
I forgot about that, because actually we talked at a Good Guys in Columbus when the car was there, and you know, I can vouch it's definitely, you know, when I saw it was looking like it's going to be a nice piece, so I can only imagine when it's finished what that thing's going to look like.
Oh, it's absolutely fantastic. And also, too, for those who have and do not have, I strongly recommend you get a subscription to RPM Magazine, because the January issue, which I have a few copies on my desk, has got a very nice coverage of that build of that car and what the Havlux have done with it.
Awesome. Well, Hyde, thanks again for coming on the show, and we'll look forward to seeing you out at the Midwest Drags this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me, Brian.
Well, that wraps up the show for this week. Thanks to Hyde for stopping by, and as always, may your reaction times be crisp and your win lights bright. Until next week, folks.